Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Grim Tides by Shanda Hahn, narrated by Amy McFadden. Prologue. As a slow fog drifted in, it covered the harbor like a white blanket. Ship bells rang out, warning sailors to be alert and cautious in the growing mist. The ships gently swayed against the wooden dock as waves splashed against their hulls. On the edge of the next pier, a group of seals slept, cuddling together like a pack of puppies. A light beam from the lighthouse pierced the darkness at the other end of the harbor. From the ocean's depths, a haunting melody drifted up, a song of desire, need, and hunger. On a fishing vessel, two men were late coming in from a long and productive day of fishing.
"Do you hear that, Jerome?"
Nicky asked his shipmate as he secured a line to the dock cleat. He paused to listen intently into the near darkness.
"Hear what, Nicky?"
Jerome replied gruffly.
"That sound."
Nicky pointed toward the foggy bay. Jerome tilted his head to listen.
"I hear the waves." "Watch the rope, Nicky. You're getting sloppy." "No, I swear I hear something." "You're just half deaf,"
Nicky snapped back. He secured the rope and continued down the dock, heading toward the moored boats, his silhouette disappearing into the fog.
"I may be half deaf, but I'm not half dumb. You never go investigate strange sounds, especially in the middle of the night,"
Jerome called out after him, but Nicky didn't respond.
"That stupid kid thinks he knows everything,"
Jerome muttered as he watched the dock, waiting for Nicky to return.
"Nicky!"
he called out again. Echo Bay was famous for its strange sounds and haunting songs, too. Many caves were only visible during low tide, and the wind whistling through those caverns created an eerie melody. Most of the time, it could be ignored. Other times, it was a call that dared one to investigate. But Jerome knew better. He knew never to approach the water's edge when he heard the call. A heavy thud reverberated off the end of the pier.
"Nicky!"
Jerome yelled out in worry. He dropped the rope, grabbed a lantern, and stepped off his fishing boat. He pulled his fish knife from his hip and walked along, scouring the shapes of each vessel, noting their empty decks. Jolly Dodger, an old-fashioned pirate ship, was permanently docked and gave tourists a pirate dinner adventure, filled with rum-tasting or non-alcoholic brews, bawdy songs, and even a fully choreographed fight. The ship's sides had been extended with seating along the docks lifted on platforms, giving the impression of a giant bowl around the boat. Jerome lifted the lantern high, and nothing moved. He limped along the pier, his old age slowing him down as he searched the fog and took note of an empty berth where the Tosalas fishing crew had either already headed out for the morning or had never returned from the night before.
"It's not funny, Nicky,"
Jerome called, sweeping the lantern from side to side. He was nearing the end of this dock, and only a few crates were left between him and the edge. Jerome turned as a figure flew out of the sky.
"Gotcha!"
Nicky yelled as he swung onto the dock from the stunt rope off the Jolly Dodger.
"Oh, you rascal!"
Jerome grabbed his chest in startlement. Nicky let go of the rope and laughed, bending over to rest his hands on his knees.
"You should have seen the look on your face, old man. You looked like you saw a ghost." "With my cataracts, you idiot, everything looks like a ghost."
Nicky chuckled, wiped his nose, and surveyed the depths again. His head cocked like he heard a noise.
"Do you really believe the rumors of treasure hidden in Echo Bay?" "No. If there were treasure, my grandfather would have found it already."
Jerome scoffed and waved a swollen hand at Nicky to follow him back to the boat.
"But what if the treasure's real?"
Nicky reached into his pocket, his fingers playing with his lucky coin.
"If the treasure's real, does that mean the curse is, too?" "Where's your head at, boy?" "It's a ploy by the travel committee to bring tourists to Echo Bay. That's all."
Jerome said as he studied Nicky, taking in his transfixed expression as he continued his scrutiny of the water.
Come, we have fish to unload. Since I ain't got a fleet, I have to bring in twice their load to pay the bills.
Jerome shuffled back, his pace picking up because he was irritated that he let the young pup get one over on him. When he didn't hear Nicky's footsteps following, he turned. Nicky was kneeling at the end of the dock, staring into the water.
What are you doing, kid?
Jerome called out. But Nicky didn't seem to hear. He slowly stood, his head turned to Jerome, his eyes glazed over as if he was sleepwalking. There was a zipping noise, and Jerome caught sight of a line of rope that had laid coiled on the edge of the dock and was now being yanked into the water with great force.
Hey!
Jerome yelled to warn Nicky, but it was too late. 1 second, Nicky stood on the edge of the dock. The next, his foot was snagged in the outgoing line without a sound. Then he was gone, swallowed by the waves.
Nicky!
Jerome ran as fast as he could, the morning light causing the waves to turn from inky black to a dark green. Through the misty fog, he could see a trail of darkness where Nicky's body was being dragged underwater out into the bay like a fish on a rope line, pulled by an unseen force. There was no ship in sight.
Sweet Mary and Joseph!
Jerome grabbed his knit hat in shock and tried to calm his heart. A terrible squeezing pressure filled his chest. He dropped to his knees, feeling lightheaded, and fell to his side. His eyes struggled to focus on the shadowy image that climbed out of the water at the end of the dock. It was covered in seaweed and slowly crawled toward him like a predatory creature. Dark eyes reflected nothing, and a mouth gaped open with razor-like teeth inside.
No!
Jerome gasped out as his head hit the dock, and then he heard it, a whispering echo of a song that chilled his bones. One he had heard once, long ago. A melody that always preludes death. Chapter 1.
What is that awful sound? Everly said, covering her ears.
She stood at the bottom of the stairs leading to the attic room. Everly carefully stepped over the stray socks and the folded towels waiting to be carried up. Ignoring the piles, Everly ran up the stairs and looked around the vaulted attic bedroom. It was quaint. A dusty, overstuffed chair was covered with piles of clothes, hopefully clean, but Everly doubted it. A full-size mirror and a few mannequins with old dresses stood in the corner near steamer trunks. On one side of the attic was the opened dormer window and her aunt's single wrought-iron bed directly underneath. Another propped-open skylight did bring in a single breeze, but the room was quite stifling, as it didn't have air conditioning. The commotion of noise came from an old Victrola, the record spinning, and the wailing coming from it was not pleasant. Everly rushed across the room and pulled the needle off the mini record with an accidental scratch. The wailing stopped. She breathed a sigh of relief.
I was listening to that.
A muffled voice came from beneath a pile of clothes on the chair.
It's soothing.
Everly turned, and the blob of clothes moved. A slender arm rose in the air and pulled a compress off her face, revealing the red eyes of her Aunt Summer. Summer was her father's, Everick Hart's, sister. Her brown curly hair was pulled back in one of her many tie-dyed headbands, and despite the warmth of the attic, she was bundled in a teal bathrobe, her feet curled up beneath her. She moved in after Everly's father passed away from cancer. Summer's boyfriend had broken up with her, and she was wallowing in self-pity and enough heartache to be the inspiration for numerous Taylor Swift songs.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a cat in heat.
Everly lifted the record and looked at the faded markings. The title was barely legible, something followed by the words Tantric Echoes. The music label icon had a swirl in the corner.
Play it much longer, and we'll have all the tomcats in the neighborhood prowling our yard.
Summer moaned, turning sideways in the chair, draping her legs over the armrest and an arm over her puffy eyes.
Well, at least someone could have a chance at love.
You only knew him for 3 days. That's barely enough time to know if he's an axe murderer. Summer gave her an ugly look.
He was a Sagittarius with a dairy allergy. I'm an Aries, and I hate blue cheese. It was like a match made in the stars.
Summer sighed dramatically.
Yeah, that's not a stretch, because nobody likes blue cheese.
Everly pinched her lips together and tried to hold back her frustration at her aunt. Summer had always been carefree and a bit off, but then every one of her family members had been different. Everly came from a line of grievers, people who can see Grimms, supernatural creatures from beyond. But the gift of sight only came when they were young, and if they witnessed someone close to them die. Hence their name, Griever. Her whole family were grievers going back generations. Her grandfather was the county coroner, her grandmother was his medical assistant, and her dad was the Misty Creek homicide detective. She now attended a private school called Gravemark that trains grievers in hunting rogue Grimms. She has an omen, a talking raven, that helps her and acts like a familiar. Weird was definitely a character trait for the Hart family. Everly looked around the Victrola for the open trunk and found an empty sleeve for the old record, noting the unique circular pattern. She slipped it back onto the stack of other old recordings that seemed like they hadn't seen the light of day in years.
You wouldn't understand what it's like to love someone so hard, and it be one-sided.
Summer sighed. Everly felt a tug in her chest. She knew. For years, she'd had a crush on Hunter Abernathy, her best friend's older brother. She'd been trying to ignore his handsome smile and charm. He'd always been off-limits, dating other girls, or one in particular, Amy Stillwell. That was until a week ago. But then, after an altercation near Hollow Lake, where Sergeant Mitchell tried to burn her alive in a cabin to cover up his and Ranger Danville's murderous crimes, Hunter had kissed her. Almost, she thought. Maybe? The more she tried to replay the moment in her head, the more she began to believe it was just a figment of her imagination. She thought there was a mere brush of contact on her lips. Maybe it was a brush of his hand? She sighed. Everly had spent countless nights obsessing over the moment that had happened in the blink of an eye, and before she could even talk to Hunter, he was gone, shipped off on a secret griever assignment to who knows where. If Holland found out that Everly had almost maybe kissed her brother, she might lose her best friend. It was a sore spot between them. Holland stated that people were only ever friends with her to date her brother. She would never do that to Holland. She couldn't betray her best friend. But simultaneously, she was betraying her heart. She looked over at her aunt, who had crumpled back into the chair and pulled the cloth over her eyes. Burying herself into the cushions, she faded into the mound and seemed to disappear into the piles of clothes around her. A muffled sob came from the pile, and Everly stood awkwardly, watching her aunt cry. She wanted to comfort her.
"Do you want me to bring you a cup of tea?" Everly asked.
"No, thank you,"
Summer said softly. Everly turned to head back downstairs, and the mound of clothes moved again.
"But I'll take an iced vanilla coffee with a dab of whipped cream."
"But I would have to drive to Deja Brew, which is across town."
"And a muffin, whatever flavor they have,"
Summer interrupted Everly. "Fine," Everly muttered, storming down the stairs to the second floor landing. She paused and glanced at the blue floral wallpaper, which was slightly more welcoming than the red fleur-de-lis wallpaper on the first floor. Holland had called her red-painted Victorian house, with its dark shutters and old medical examiner's office slash morgue in the backyard, creepy. To her, it was home. She continued downstairs to the charming kitchen with faded cabinets and an eat-in kitchen table. A door by the stairs led to the basement and back door outside. Off the kitchen was a solarium. Grandma Birdie was watering her plants, which ranged from medicinal to deadly, and were kept in various colorful pots, speaking to Birdie's colorful personality. Everly grabbed her keys from the dish on the counter and headed for the back door. "What does she want now?" Birdie asked without turning around. She was still beautiful in her 70s. She once had the same strawberry blonde hair as Everly's, but hers had faded to a soft golden white with hints of red. Her eyes were lighter, and her skin was still flawless and pale. Like her daughter, Summer, Birdie always chose bright colors to accent her look. Today, it was a bright yellow shirt and pink capri pants with a polka-dot work apron. She had a rainbow silk scarf around her neck. "Iced coffee from Deja Brew and a muffin." Birdie shook her head and motioned Everly to follow her to the fancy dining room that no one ever used. In it, there was a white lace tablecloth covering a beautiful Queen Anne dining room set, glass lamps, and a china cabinet. Birdie went to the bottom cupboard in the china cabinet and pulled out a sleeve of plastic cups with the purple bean logo of Deja Brew. She took a dome lid, wrapped straw, and a paper bag from the stack. "What are you doing?" Everly asked in awe. "Some things never change." Birdie took a cup, went into the kitchen, added ice cubes, pulled out a bottle of iced coffee she had tucked away in the back behind the orange juice, poured it into the plastic cup, and added a tablespoon of Munnin's vanilla syrup, whipped topping, and put the dome lid on it. She pushed it across the counter at Everly. "What about the muffin?" Everly asked, somewhat in awe. Birdie pulled an individually vacuum-sealed muffin from another cupboard and slipped it into a paper bag. "Now let it sit for 10 minutes so the ice starts to melt and the cup gets condensation, then bring it up to her."
"How?"
Everly shook her head in surprise.
"Hey, I may not claim her, but I raised her. She has always craved the same thing after a breakup. I learned this trick years ago. I'm just thankful that Deja Brew hasn't changed their logo or menu all that time, or I'd be broke from all her coffee runs."
"She doesn't know the difference?"
"She hasn't bought herself coffee from there in 15 years. Has to do with her boycotting them because of some offense committed years ago."
"What offense?" Everly asked.
"Your aunt played her ukulele for open mic night, and the manager banned her. Summer still craves their coffee, but refuses to patronize the place in person."
Everly frowned. In some ways, she understood that her aunt tended to be a bit much and hard to handle, but that made her unique. She definitely didn't have a musical gene in her body. Neither did Everly. But that didn't stop Summer from trying. Despite having zero talent, she was determined to be the next Janis Joplin. Birdie pulled a chair from the table and sat, avoiding the chair that Everick, her father, always sat in.
"So tell me, how have you been?"
Everly leaned against the counter, pulling her strawberry blonde braid over her shoulder and trying to avoid this conversation. She started to roll the ends of her green plaid shirt between her fingers.
"Fine,"
she answered. Birdie's blue eyes narrowed.
"Fine. My daughter falls head over heels for a guy within 3 days, and when he doesn't return her calls, she mourns for days. You've lost your father, had your life turned upside down within a few weeks, and were almost burned alive in a cabin in the woods. I think I need more than just fine."
"I lost my dad, but you lost your son," Everly corrected. "How are you handling it?" Birdie's painted lips thinned, and she knowingly wagged her finger at Everly.
"Don't change the subject. I'm old. I've known my fair share of death and have grieved for years. I've learned to deal with the pain. You're a recent griever, and the PTSD comes back sometimes at the most inopportune time, like flashbacks. So,
Are you still going to stick with fine?
Her eyes narrowed to slits. Everly sucked in her breath and watched as her grandma noticed her tell. She thought she had been hiding it, but who was she fooling? It was why she had started returning home each evening after class and driving to school in the morning. She hoped to be able to sleep at home in bed, hoped the bad dreams would disappear. Instead, they just intensified.
I can tell when a griever is hiding things, Bertie said. Just nightmares.
Everly shrugged, playing it off.
Oh, bug.
Bertie placed her hand, covered with rings, on Everly's shoulder.
How about I make you one of my special teas? I've got just the one for nightmares. I call it Nox.
Sure.
Everly sat at the table as her grandma went into her solarium and started to pull a few leaves and petals from various plants. Then she went to her dried leaf tea tins. All her tea blends were homemade. When she was done, she poured her tea into a homemade tea bag and attached a label. She pushed it across the table toward Everly. Everly took the tea bag and sniffed the contents. Hints of lavender, lemon, and something she didn't recognize but smelled relaxing.
Now, Bertie said softly, never stir this one. Let it steep only.
Why?
Bertie placed her hands on her hips and harumphed at her.
Tradition, that's why. Superstitious is what you are.
Everly put the tea bag on the counter and leaned back to close her eyes. She was rubbing her temples. She couldn't help but still hear that record's echoing, vibrant, trashy noise. It seemed to reverberate through her head.
Nope. Wait. That vibration was the phone in her pocket.
Everly slipped her phone out and saw the text from Holland.
You coming?
Yes, I have a free period this morning. I'm coming in late.
Is everything okay? I feel like you're avoiding me.
Everly's heart stopped in her chest. Did Holland suspect the almost kiss with her brother?
My family needs me right now.
It was always easier to lie in a text, since she didn't have to look someone in the eye.
Kay, just text me when you get here.
I will.
And as if thinking about boy problems wasn't enough, another text alert popped up. This time it was from Ian.
Stop sulking. Get to school.
She could almost hear him barking through the phone at her. She stared at the text. Sulk. She didn't sulk. Everly groaned.
You can't avoid him forever,
Bertie said slyly.
Avoid who?
Everly's head snapped up so fast, her phone dropped onto the table with a clatter.
The other person on the line. From how your face just changed to the color of a crab apple and immediately paled, I'd have to say, a boy.
He's not a boy.
Oh, excuse me, man.
Bertie's lips pursed into a knowing smile, which made Everly groan. Bertie's eyes drew to the newspaper sitting in her father's spot, and that smile turned down. This time it was Bertie's face that went white.
What is it?
Everly asked. Bertie took the paper and tucked it under her arm.
Nothing that concerns you. I just missed the sale on roast beef at the Quick Mart.
Bertie's eyes flickered away, and she got up from the table. Everly watched her out of the side of her eye, and Bertie casually slid the paper into the garbage can. One thing her detective father taught her was how to spot a lie, and her grandma had about three different tells. When the go-to glass had enough condensation on the counter, Everly decided it was time. She went and slammed the back kitchen door and carried the drink up to her aunt, placing it on the coffee table next to the chair. A hand reached out and picked up the drink. After fumbling with the straw, Summer placed it in the lid and took a long sip.
So good. Deja Rue's iced coffee is the best.
Everly didn't stay, but headed back downstairs. Bertie had left the kitchen. Everly quietly lifted the lid and unfolded the newspaper to see what her grandma was trying to hide from her. On the front page was another article about Sergeant Mitchell, the police officer who had tried to kill Everly because she figured out he was behind the Hollow Lake killings. But Everly and her friends knew better. She knew that Sergeant Mitchell was working with Ranger Danville, a werewolf who was once a griever and happened to be Ian Holmes's, her school mentor's, father. The two had some twisted deal involving blackmail that ended in Ranger Danville's death, shot by Mitchell. Mitchell was then killed by Officer Stevens, who caught him in the act of trying to burn her alive in a cabin. Except now, there was a new detail released to the press. There was a small picture of her from last year's Misty Creek High School yearbook. It wasn't a horrible photo. At least she was smiling and wearing her favorite denim jacket that accented her blue eyes, making them seem significant, doe-like. The image printed made her pale skin look almost sickly. Her high cheekbones had a hint of blush, one of the few times a year she wore makeup. Her strawberry blonde hair fell past her shoulders. Everything about the picture felt average. In the article, she read, "Everly Hart is the daughter of recently passed Misty Creek homicide detective Everick Hart." Officer Stevens said he would try to keep her name out of the press. Well, that didn't happen. Uh-oh. Everly crumpled the paper into the garbage can. Just as a flash of light blinded her, she looked into a camera lens and saw a photographer standing on her back porch. She blinked, and a beautiful brunette beside the photographer tapped the window frantically. "Everly, do you want to tell us about your close encounter with death?" The reporter smiled. It was beautiful, pearly white, and had all the allure of a crocodile waiting to eat her alive. The flash bulb went off again, and she noticed a video camera on a third person's shoulder. Everly dove into the back hall and pressed against the wall to hide. The wall of picture frames of the generations of Harts dug into her back. "There's even more out front," Bertie snapped, storming from the front entryway. Everly made her way to the front door and looked out the side light. "News vans from all three local channels, and even that gossipy online podcast. What's his name?" Bertie tapped the window to point to the elderly gentleman with pepper gray hair and mustache. He looked like he came out of a Poirot mystery novel, with his tan jacket and hat. Bertie wasn't fooling Everly. She knew the name of the podcaster, Gerald Petrovich. He was her online nemesis, and she was secretly obsessed with everything he produced, which mainly consisted of supernatural events and gossip relating too close to her family's line of work. But every once in a while, he landed on a nugget of truth. Everly even helped Bertie make an online account so she could log in and leave him scathing comments about his detective abilities. She lived to prove him wrong. "How do I get to school?" Everly asked. "Once I leave, they will be all over me." Bertie gave her a wry smile. "Oh, you just leave it to me and Corvus. Give us 5 minutes." Bertie disappeared into the house, and a few minutes later, she heard an upper floor window open. Everly grinned when she figured out what Bertie was doing. As one of the few grievers who could talk to birds, she never outgrew that gift, even though it was destined for grievers to lose their ability to see Grimms and any other gift they might have gotten once they reached a certain age. Everly saw a dark shape fly past the window. It was Corvus. It pained her to think that she might lose her ability to hear him one day. Everly grabbed her bag and keys, headed to the back hall, and waited for the signal. A dark shadow, a flock of ravens called an unkindness, grew overhead. They began to land in trees and on the neighbor's roof, and other birds, large and small, began to assemble.
"You ready?"
Bertie called from upstairs.
"Yep."
Everly stayed hidden, waiting, listening. Then there was a screech and a thud, followed by more screaming. Everly peeked around the corner to see the reporter and camera operators running down the back porch steps as the birds began to dive bomb them, sweeping past, flapping their wings into their faces. The expensive camera fell to the ground and the reporter tripped. The cameraman helped her to her feet, and they took off running toward the street.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?